Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
382-7502 or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Friday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here with you on this nice-looking Friday. And looks like it's going to be a pretty nice weekend. You know, just a couple of days ago, we were talking about rain on Sunday. Now, maybe no rain till Sunday night. So it looks like
you're talking about here locally.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
it's not going to be beautiful in Fayetteville.
Yeah, different situation.
Today or tomorrow, yeah. As a matter of fact. It's raining in Fayetteville, has been raining in Fayetteville today, and going to be raining off and on all day tomorrow. So I wonder, you know, what kind of impact that'll have on the ballgame. Usually think of it as an equalizer. It favors the underdog usually in that. Auburn now is the underdog, about a field goal underdog in the Arkansas game.
I mean, it seemingly gives Auburn an out if they have a fifth game of bad offense in SEC play, right?
Yeah.
You can say, oh, well,
God, that's just what you need, another excuse.
Yeah, a fifth game, you can say, oh, well, you know, it was rainy and muddy, and that's why the offense.
We couldn't throw the ball because it was wet.
It was that there were really good teams the first four games, and
now the weather's bad.
Yeah, but now the weather's bad, so, you know, it's like.
Something else is bad.
No, I just think, we were talking about it a little bit before the show starts, like, I Hugh Freeze has made a point several times this week to say those first four games in conference play were against four genuine playoff contenders, four of the most talented teams in the conference.
And all four of those teams are very much in the playoff picture right now.
You cannot say that about Arkansas.
No.
You cannot make the case that if Auburn loses tomorrow, it's just a matter of the schedule is really tough and you're facing another top-tier team because that's life in the SEC. Arkansas has pretty clearly been one of the four or five worst teams in the league this year, as has Auburn,
right,
for that matter. And you can't, if you're not winning these, what hope do you provide that you're going to win at any of the important games down the stretch? Or
let's go ahead with the conversation we were having. I mean, because I'd love people to be able to chime in. I'm not arguing what you were saying. You're hearing people saying.
I'm hearing people worry about, oh man, if we keep Hugh Freeze for year four, how bad things could get.
And your question was, who is really wanting, right at this point, right now, who is for or definitely saying, give him a year four? Give him year four.
I think there are probably people who invested heavily in Hugh Freeze and want to see this succeed. But if it's clear failure after 3 years and you're making the decision, like here's what I think. I think John Cohen would be, if things went the way they're going now, and John Cohen.
If Auburn is under 500 for a fourth straight year and a third straight year under Hugh Freeze.
If you get five more games like the first seven.
Yeah.
And like the first 32 that Hugh Freeze has coached at Auburn, and John Cohen decides, you know what, let's tinker. And let's bring Hugh Freeze back for a fourth year and see how it looks. If he does that, it's not just Hugh Freeze getting fired next year. And if you make that decision,
well, I mean, you're assuming that he comes back in next year.
That's what I mean.
If he comes back and next year follows,
yes,
the first 3 years.
I think that's a situation where John Cohen would be gambling his job on giving.
If you gave
Hugh Freeze a fourth year, I'm not sure it's John Cohen hiring the replacement. I think if you fired Hugh Freeze this year, one would think that most athletic directors get more than one football coach. I think if you made the decision this year after these 32 games and what you think if the next five are like the first 32, I think that people would be saying if it goes wrong next year with Freeze, you need institutional change at Auburn. It's not a new football coach that needs to be there. It's the people making the decisions would need to be there. So that's where I would say a fourth year, people would be willing. You'd need to be willing to gamble your job and your reputation on giving Freeze a fourth year. That's where I think it is right now. Maybe people are willing to do that. Maybe there are some folks
I've heard from some people, and I've read some comments from people that have decent contacts saying, the big money still is behind Hugh Freeze. And I would say I wonder how much they're behind Hugh Freeze, as in my opinion, they're not ready to write the check to cut Hugh Freeze loose. I think that's more the case now. It's like, here's a huge investment that they have made, and now they're gonna, some people are expecting that, well, they'll be called on to write that big check again. Well, that doesn't mean that they're necessarily for a fourth year for Hugh Freeze. They're just, at this point,
they're
today,
not calling for his job.
Today,
yet.
Yes, before Arkansas and Kentucky and Vandy, they are, well, we've got to be sure, because they feel like it's their money that's involved. But no, I agree with you on John Cohen, but you still and I don't see John Cohen, because John Cohen hasn't fired Hugh Freeze, doesn't mean that he won't or wouldn't after another game or two. And that's where I think people, a lot of people don't understand. ADs aren't going to be just talking and going, yeah, this really sucks and he'd better win. That's not the kind of thing that you say publicly.
Yeah, I get the sense that, like, you know what? Let's use Freeze's words here. Freeze is right in that Auburn played four really, I mean, they played four teams ranked in the top 15 in conference play. Firing Hugh Freeze after losing those games maybe is a little bit too cutthroat for some folks. You don't have that excuse tomorrow.
No.
You lose against Arkansas.
Tomorrow or next week. And then even, you know, even the fact that, you know, Vandy is a top 10 team right now. And, you know, they should be favored over Auburn. These next three ball games, Auburn has to win at least two of three. I mean, if they don't, they lose tomorrow, then you're not going to win. You're not going to win two of the next three.
Let's get important with it. If he loses tomorrow, do you think they probably should make a move? Because that's where I think I am. Like, I think if you lose tomorrow, there's very little reason to believe. Like, you can give it to the end of the season if you want. But what's really going to change about the case he can make for a year four? If you lose tomorrow, what's really going to change between?
Yeah, because I don't see, if you lose tomorrow, I don't see how you beat Vandy or Alabama. I mean, I'm not even sure about beating Kentucky. But I mean, if you lose tomorrow and you're looking at least two more losses to get you to seven losses again this year, no, I don't see, and you're also
looking at a 33 game body of work,
right?
At that point,
yeah, you'd
which
be
is,
14-19 if you lose tomorrow,
and in conference the record would be terrible,
5-16.
Yeah, I mean, is that in SEC play?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah,
doesn't he only have the? Yeah, okay, yeah, you're five, yeah, you're right. This would be your 5, yeah, 5-16 would,
yes,
be your 16th SEC loss. Like, yeah, that's, yeah, it's just yeah, I mean, I would, like, there's again seemingly an opportunity to change the story with four games in conference, you know, before the season's over.
It has to start tomorrow. Yeah. There's no more there's no leeway.
Yeah, I mean,
at all.
And I think for a lot of people, it had to start against Georgia, or it had to start against Missouri, which is why, like, I think of the support he has left, it has to. I mean, you'd lose what? I mean, and he's never been closer to the brink.
Than
he is right now.
Absolutely,
I think, as Auburn coach, you've never had more people ready to see something else or ready to see a change under the Freeze era. And yeah, I think a loss tomorrow. And I would be fascinated to see who's standing up on Sunday and Monday and saying, keep him if Auburn loses tomorrow.
Who's
going to do it publicly?
Well, I was going to say, who was standing up publicly this past week?
Yeah.
Is anyone standing up publicly saying, keep him? No, they're just not standing up publicly and saying, he's got to go.
Of the
people that really matter.
Oh, the people, yeah, the people who make the decisions.
I'm not talking
about,
you know, our callers.
But there are some.
The folks that, you know, the majority of folks just in the stands or Auburn fans.
Yeah, but I think even after Missouri, there were some people willing to say, all right, well, it's been quality opponents, and you saw a little bit of offensive progress against Missouri. Like,
but didn't it sound like it's been, but it better change now?
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't been, that's okay because those four are quality opponents, And, you know, I don't think anybody would be fine with a 500 or worse record this year.
Feels like ADs only get to pick a certain number of quarterbacks, or ADs only get to pick a certain number of head coaches. Head coaches only get to pick a certain number of quarterbacks without hitting on one before it's a big problem.
Right.
I wonder if that's another thing to watch tomorrow. And I know the weather makes it another factor, but if Auburn's offense were to start,
I think you'd have to, regardless of how convinced Hugh Freeze, Kent Austin, Derek Nix, and the whole Auburn staff might be, that there's no doubt in their mind that Jackson Arnold gives them their best chance of winning. If he continues to struggle, you have to try something else, just in case you come up with one of those unforeseen, wow, you didn't have any clue this was coming. Somebody performs better with the lights on than they do in practice.
Well, and that's also, I mean, that you think about the first 2 years of the Freeze era, right, at Auburn, and he's had situations where a quarterback was, you know, a quarterback had his full confidence and then didn't. I mean, you remember Peyton Thorne in the offseason leading up to the 24 season. I mean, they were saying stuff like, he's an extension of the coaching staff. He's
he's by far
our best offensive player, a coach on the field. And after Cal, it took one game against a major conference opponent.
Yeah, of course. I mean,
they threw a couple of interceptions in that game.
I do wonder, though, but then after last year, in hindsight, I think Hugh Freeze felt if he hadn't made a change, they might have won another ball game.
That's right. They were probably. I think you could say. I know some folks thought that they shouldn't have put Peyton back in last year, but you know, whatever. But like I think you could argue they were impatient last season by making the change after game two. Maybe too patient this year. Mm-hmm. In that, I mean, I think there were some folks. I mean,
it's a first year guy this year. It was a second year quarterback last year.
We've had folks who said, you know, they would have liked to see something different mid A&M game. We had some folks wondering if you could see a change after the A&M game before Georgia, and then after Georgia, there were folks thinking, like, I mean, the first if Damari Alston hadn't quit after the Georgia game, the first question would have been, what's the status of the quarterback after the Georgia game going into Missouri?
The problem has been the last two ball games, the first drive has been good.
Yeah, and when you felt like you were like, all right, Jackson needs to do something here or we're benching him, in those situations, in large part, he did something. Because that's where I was. That's where I was at the end of the first half against Missouri. Mm-hmm. Like when Auburn gets the ball back and you've had four drives, and I acknowledge the Cam drop, but after four drives, you have 21 passing yards. Jackson's 4 for 9. Like, that's where you were when you go back on the field as an offense with 2.5 minutes left. I think in that situation, if your quarterback doesn't deliver on that drive, you go into the half with those numbers and you really wonder if you need to make a change urgently for the second half of the Missouri game. Jackson played well enough on that drive at the end of the first half.
Right.
Hits the deep shot to Perry.
Yep.
And you get
a scramble play to Perry. Yeah.
Yeah, you get that one. So, and then in the and then in the third quarter, and the, you know, Jackson heated up a little bit. I mean, he still made some errors, but I thought there were moments where he found a rhythm. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't, you know, I didn't think there was a moment in the second half where making a quarterback change made sense. And then you have the two overtime periods where
it was terrible.
Where you look broken.
Yeah.
You looked broken again. And so I think you're back. It's two steps forward, two steps back.
Yeah.
You're exactly where you were when the Missouri game started, which is thinking your offense needs to make some plays, or you're wondering what you're doing at quarterback, and maybe after the game you're wondering what you're doing at head coach.
Yep, so that's where we are heading into tomorrow. Arkansas, of course, third game under Bobby Petrino, and they have their offense has improved, and it wasn't bad to start with. Coming in, the defense has been what's just atrocious for Arkansas, but they're at home. Again, weather could be a huge factor tomorrow with wind and rain tomorrow during the ball game. Some folks think that favors a passing team because the receivers know where they're going. other folks, you know, the old standard has been it favors the running team because there's less chance of the ball slipping away.
And it's tougher to throw downfield, right? Because you expose the
especially
ball.
Especially with wind involved, and rain.
You expose the ball to the elements. You expose the ball, you had a wind. So, yeah, curious to see how torrential of rain we're talking about, or if it's a sort of an off and on, you know, light shower situation. But big one tomorrow for Auburn in Fayetteville against a coach who has faced Auburn several times in his career and usually has something up his sleeve when the Auburn Tigers come to town.
Oh, no doubt about it. We'd love to hear from you. We're just underway here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Give us a call on The Drive hotline, 334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Keeping count is important. That's how we...
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and let's go ahead and get to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Jared is up first. Hey, Jared.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Pretty good.
Hey, I actually got to go to the game last weekend, which was good, but I was just going to ask, I know y'all may or may not have seen it from your vantage point, but it was in the fourth quarter and during a timeout, but Ashton Daniels was like throwing to receivers in the end zone, on the north end zone. Did y'all see that?
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, I noticed him warming up more than just nonchalantly a couple of times, as a matter of fact.
It's one of those things you just wonder. It's like, even though, as Freeze keeps on saying, Jackson Arnold's not playing bad, sometimes you need that spark plug. But looking to tomorrow's game, I don't know. It's just funny, I think, of the irony of it, that we're playing Bobby Petrino and we have a coach that we're thinking about whether we're going to keep him or not as far as the fans go. And then now you got, instead of the trustees going in the middle of the night to another state to see Bobby Petrino, we're flying straight there to his school. So I think that's kind of the irony of that.
Yeah, although
I don't think
that if Auburn makes a change that Bobby would be among the candidates this time.
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of arms about that after everything in our notorious history with him.
You know what? If Auburn made wholesale changes and a defensive-minded head coach took over, and he thought Bobby Petrino was the right guy for the offense, I'd listen.
As an offensive coordinator, that's a different story.
I'd listen. Yeah. I mean, that's where.
And I told you that Don Dunn said on Monday right here that Bobby Petrino was the best head coach he'd worked for.
That's not me saying Auburn should hire Bobby Petrino as the next head coach. But I'm willing to let bygones be bygones in some situations. And I think Bobby Petrino's a phenomenal offensive coordinator when given the talent.
He's a
to
tremendous
compete.
Offensive coach and play caller. There's no question about it.
I think about it, the more I like the idea of having a defensive coach, minded coach, with bringing in an offensive coordinator, and they kind of stay out of it because on three straight offensive minded coaches, and it seemed like it's just slowly gotten worse.
Yeah, and you know, Dan and I were talking about it before the show, too. I mean, sure, Lane Kiffin appears to thus far be an exception because as long as he's been in football, he's been able to dial up plays and have great offenses. A lot of play callers, it seems like their offense gets figured out at some point.
I did realize something, though, and what I believe to be Lane Kiffin's superpower. And from watching him, and look, I've been watching Lane Kiffin, not to give the resume, but I remember the USC offenses. Mm-hmm. I remember when it didn't work at the Raiders. I was in Los Angeles when he was the head coach at USC. Been watching him in the SEC off and on, even at Florida Atlantic. What he does better than almost anyone else is, and I know this seems simple, but he can sniff out if a quarterback has it or not, consistently better than just about anybody else. He can find the quarterback that he needs for his offense, and that's, you look around the country, that's harder to do than people realize. Mm-hmm. A lot of places thought they had their quarterback. Auburn hasn't sniffed the right quarterback out since Bo Nix got hurt, seemingly. Yeah. And with Lane Kiffin, yeah. he does it again and again and again, and does it with multiple guys per team.
He does.
When you look at Simmons and Trinidad, I mean, he's phenomenal at it, and that's something that, that's a skill that can take you really, really far.
I totally agree with y'all, but I'm hoping for the best for tomorrow. I mean, I'm hoping we can score more than 17 points. It seems like the defense.
If Auburn didn't score more than 17 points,
they give up more than 17 points. It's the game's over with if they allow more than 17.
Yeah,
so far in the SEC.
Yeah. Holding Arkansas to 17 is going to be very difficult. Maybe the weather will help. But if Auburn doesn't score more than 17, I don't give them much of a chance at all.
You know what you haven't seen Auburn have to do either is fight. I mean, A&M's kind of an exception, but even then that game was not highly competitive because of the way the offense was looking. But you haven't had to see Auburn try to make up a significant deficit.
Two-score deficit.
You know, but right. get upset. I mean, that's what I was worried about with Missouri. Mm-hmm. It's like when they were driving at the end of the first half.
It could have gone up 17-7.
You go up. Double digits on this Auburn team and make them fight from behind. And I just wonder if the offense will have the firepower to do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the play calling to make sense with what you're doing. Like if the running's working, don't immediately drop it and then go to straight passing. To feels like we throw it to Preston Howard more than even to the receivers, and we're not sure if he's going to catch it or not every time they throw it to him.
Good stuff, Jared. 334-321-1390. Again, we'd love for you to join in as it's Bill and Dan here on the Friday Drive.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. Dan, let's talk about something positive. Mm. Tell me what it's going to be like tonight.
Man, I mean, it is.
With Blake Snell on the mound?
It is. That place is going to be, I mean, this is a hoisted by your own petard situation because I did say earlier this offseason, there is nothing like playoff baseball in Toronto. That place is rocking like no other major league stadium rocks when they're playing an important game. And you don't see a lot of like true enormous home field advantages in baseball. It feels like Toronto has one. I know they lost some games at home to Seattle, mm-hmm. but like that place is not. It's going to be tough, and a World Series there is just going to be that ratcheted up to a million. And I'm glad the Dodgers have some guys that have been through the fire before, because I think just about anybody. I think anybody else would struggle to face down the atmosphere that Toronto is going to present tonight for the boys in blue.
Well, tell me this: are you surprised by the starters both teams named for the first game?
I think Snell makes a ton of sense.
Absolutely,
I mean, just as I mean,
he's been
hot, yeah, but. I think I'd have thrown Yamamoto.
That's interesting, and the kid. The kid for Toronto was brilliant in Game 6.
And he is, I mean, he's come from the low minors all the way to Game 1 starter in the series.
Hey, Brett, is Yammers going in Game 2, or are they holding him for L.A.?
Because I really don't know.
I think it might be I think the listed starter is Yamamoto for Game 2. See, I was wondering if they were maybe going to go Glasnow in Game 2 because he was in the AL East, although it was a different Toronto team a couple of years ago. But he knows the ballpark and maybe hold Yamamoto for Game 3. But I think they're pitching Yoshi tomorrow night. So you know what? And I'm back where I was with the Brewers. Win one of these two this weekend, and you're feeling great back in LA.
Exactly.
If it's 1-1 when LA goes back for Game 3, it's fine. If it's 0-2, then it's an enormous. It'll either be Glasnow or Ohtani starting Game 3 for LA. I would guess it's Glasnow, but that would be an enormous start for whoever they throw.
Hey, last thing I read the article on however you say it, Vesia.
Yeah.
Tell me what the story is there. Does anybody know?
So it's ominous, and they're giving him a lot of privacy. But his wife has been documenting her pregnancy on Instagram for the last. I mean, she's approaching her due date, and they announced that there is you don't want to speculate at all. But he is But so he's away from the team and with his with his wife.
Okay, pull us through tonight.
Yep. Yeah, and certainly all the best in that situation. They called it a deeply personal family matter, significant enough that he's away from his team during the World Series. So you hope everything's
the Dodgers
okay there.
Without a couple of lefties with no Tanner Scott or Vesia there for the World Series. All right, why don't we go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break? That way we can stay on schedule. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls here on the Friday Drive.
Remember when you would dream about what you would grow up to be?
82-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And before we get back to the phones, I was thinking we'd talk a little baseball with a series starting tonight and Banana Ball coming to Plainsman Park tomorrow. I have not watched. I've seen highlights of Banana Ball, but I have never watched an entire Banana Ball game.
It looks like it's a lot of fun in person.
Yeah.
It looks like it's a lot of fun
in
person.
Well, I'm reading about it because, I do have a credential for tomorrow night, and I'm reading, and it's interesting reading some of the quotes and hearing what Butch Thompson has to say about, they've been working on some things like on a walk, you know, the batter just runs and you can't make a play until all nine players in the field have touched the ball. I mean, things like that. So
now my understanding is that former Auburn baseball player Caden Green will be part of the Bananas lineup.
Oh, I didn't see tomorrow. That.
Okay, yeah, Caden Green's been, you know, part of. I don't know exactly how it works if you're drafted into the firefighters or the party animals or the Bananas or exactly how that works. But I think they make some exceptions for guys playing and, you know, going home.
Cool.
And I think Caden Green should be part of the Bananas lineup tomorrow as they play in his former ballpark, Plainsman Park.
Oh, that's going to be something to see. All right. Speaking of baseball, let's get back to the Drive hotline and our good friend Tex is up next. Hey, Tex.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tex.
A couple topics I can speak on. I've been to a Bananas game here at LSU at the Box, and a lot like the Globetrotters, mm-hmm. incredibly athletic baseball guys that do some strange things on a baseball field, like flip and catch the ball behind their back and all this. So it will be entertaining. And so it is, it's fun, but, you know, I had the opportunity to buy tickets and I've seen them once. And for a baseball guy, it was fun to watch the first time.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't think I could go back. It's like watching a comedy movie and you like it, but you don't want to go watch it anymore.
Yeah, you know it once you've seen it, even though there might be something that you haven't seen. I did like one of the comments.
Tex has been saying for a long time, too, that baseball needs to be more like TikTok, right? It needs to be more like his favorite social media platforms. And so this delivers.
You're going to die. Somebody came to me today and say, hey, have you seen this TikTok? And I'm going, seriously?
No, I liked Butch's comment about the scoring, saying that you can learn from that, you know, win each inning.
Yes, win each. That is true. That is true. And they are talented individuals, don't get me wrong. And I hope Stilts is there. Seeing this guy's pitch on stilts is spectacular. And they're not 2 feet or 3 foot high stilts.
No, you're right about that. I've seen that. I mean, not live, obviously, but
yes, it is remarkable to watch. I can barely stand up on my two legs.
Yeah,
much less stand up on stilts and do something like that. So,
and the story from the 60 Minutes piece about them, the story that he auditioned initially as a baseball player, and then mm-hmm. mentioned. Oh, well, by the way, I know how to walk on stilts and I have some with me and demonstrate. It's kind of like he did not plan on being the guy on stilts. And it was once they realized he could do it, it's like, well, that's guess what you are now. You're the guy who plays on stilts.
Just imagine you're looking at a ball coming from a guy who looks like he's about eight.
Yeah, no kidding.
Tall. So it's difficult to hit. So you still with me?
That's right.
Okay. So anyway. A couple things about the coaching search. it's easy. I always find amusement in times when people who don't necessarily are going to be the ones that have to put the money up talk about the money that it's going to take to fire a coach and then hire a coach and get the right one, because it also ends up affecting season ticket holders in the end. Not at the same level it affects the big boosters, but I think what's going on right now is purely a financial issue, because you're going to ask the same people to pony up the money to get rid of him, and then you're going to ask for the money to hire the next person. And that is a big ask.
Yep.
Especially, we did it 4 years ago, right? Is that right?
Three, yeah.
3 years ago. Okay. You're asking them to duplicate it again. I think that's a very difficult ask. Unless you and then add in, by the way, revenue sharing, NIL, facilities upgrades, all the things we've been doing, you know, you have to create income. And where's that going to come from? Big donors and season ticket holders.
But you're an economics guy, though, Tex, and you would understand better than a lot, though. The cost of – folks point out the cost of making a change, because those numbers are very clear, the buyout, the cost of new contracts – for your new coaches. What's tougher to decipher, what's the cost of not making a change? Or like, what could, if it's, you know, what's the cost of keeping an unpopular coach?
Well, I mean, Auburn has just, you know, set and extended its own record of consecutive sellouts at home. And, you know, I think some people were surprised that it had only been 17. So, I mean, that tells you that, you know, it's not so easy. It's not always just automatically going to be a sellout, no matter whether you win or lose.
Exactly. Well, and what I think what you're going to start seeing, I think when I come up from the Kentucky game, so the difference in the atmosphere and what was going on outside the stadium for the Georgia game versus the Missouri game was completely different.
You're right.
The grounds are packed. There are people everywhere. And the stadium was literally packed. There weren't people sitting around us as much in the Missouri game. And you could see empty seats across in the scholarship section on the alumni side. So economically, that impacts sales of – evidently it doesn't impact the sale of beer. We sell a lot of beer. And that's a whole other story. But it's concessions, parking, you know, there's so much that
merch,
goes into
right?
it.
Merch and T-shirts and all that?
Yes. You have to have the money in place to make a coaching change. If you don't have the money in place, you can't make the change. Even though it may cost you a little bit more money going down the road, some of these guys and girls may want to wait a year and let's see what happens at the beginning of next year, get rid of them then, put in somebody, get through it, and then get the coach.
Well, that's what Florida did. You know, of course, right. I mean, of course, Billy Napier sort of forced that by going on a winning streak, which we're waiting to see, you know, is that possible for Auburn?
Yes. But I will just tell you, if it's done soon, I would expect TUF to go up next year and season ticket prices for football.
Which is interesting in that John Cohen has already said the season tickets prices are not going up. But he didn't say anything about TUF.
Correct. And I would think it will also happen in baseball and basketball and other sports.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It'll trickle down to every sport that can produce revenue.
Correct. So I think it's 100%. I've never met a coach that didn't think they could win and turn it around. My biggest, and I think I heard Dan mention this once or twice, my biggest concern now is, what do the players do? Because in today's environment, do players – I'll just give you an example. Multiple times in the Missouri game, Cam Coleman never left the line of scrimmage. Multiple times. Even on some pass plays. Very interesting to me.
Yeah, no kidding. I did not notice that.
The effort did not seem to be, you know, if I go – now, when they started targeting him, that's completely changed. But multiple times, if the ball was not coming direct, by the way, I think we may have spent too much time teaching our quarterback to go through a progression instead of being able to recognize which guy was going to be open looking at the defense. So the progression, I think, gets in it. And if the play is called to one side, he was not leaving the line of scrimmage. And if he did, he didn't run very hard. So it's, you know, it's what are our players going to continue to do? Do they have enough pride and enough because they don't – they can go in the transfer portal at the end of the year.
Right.
And get paid to go somewhere else. And maybe somebody else is winning right now, you know. And so it's – the financial side is the biggest part of this whole thing. Somebody has to pony up the money because I don't think we can afford from just an athletic department situation to do it and hire the next great coach. I just don't think we can do it financially without hurting the average season ticket holder significantly and getting money pulled in from other boosters that may be a little bit farther down than, say, the top five or six. I think Tim Cook could afford to do it, but is he willing to?
Now, and is that something, do you think that it's interesting? Like, I wonder if the season continues on the slide it's on, if folks who are on the fence right now could reach a breaking point, if they're not there yet, where it becomes easier to write that check, or the season continues on this trajectory and you sort of, yeah, you force the issue out of concern of, mm-hmm. yeah, what kind of team and what kind of fan base will you have next year if you keep him?
I think that's possible, but in the end, it's about the ask. How much are they asked to give? That's going to be the question. What's it going to cost to get the people that you want to target? You know what the buyout is. How much more do I have to give you so that we can get the coach we want? Because I don't want to pony the money up. Just if it's me,
no,
I would not want to.
You absolutely.
I don't want to put the money.
No, go ahead.
I don't want to put up the money and not get the guy we want.
No, you don't want to do that and then not be able to get someone that is going to upgrade the situation. Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right, guys, I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, Tex, good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. We'll get one more before our final first hour break.
Pat.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Yeah. Got a minute. I got 1 minute. Okay, well,
no, you're in.
I guess.
No, you got plenty of time.
Okay, well, I guess I hear Tex and I'm trying to understand. Okay, so Auburn University makes all this money for student tuition and all that, and that cannot be used. He's not an employee of the university.
No, coach. as far as the above his regular salary, which I think listed around $250,000. Anything above that is coming from athletic funds. It's not coming from university funding.
I know it's not coming theoretically, but is it illegal to use other funds? Like Auburn? Because a comment was made last week that Auburn, well, I think it was Justin or whatever. He was said when I called in, he said, Auburn is not in a position right now to hire a big time coach, and I totally cannot understand that. Is he saying that we financially cannot afford to pay, like Indiana can afford to pay, or is he saying that no coach would come here? Because I don't believe that at all.
No, I don't think he's talking about no coach would come here. I think it is yes. You are not the budget. The university budget does not have extra for, you know, either replacing a coach or hiring a new coach. That's got to come from athletic funds. And right now,
that's a law, or that's just something we made up, a rule that Auburn decided to make their own rule up. Like I decided I'm only going to spend so much on security, you know, or I'm only going to spend so much on a band. But I really could if I wanted to. Well, I just have my own guidelines. Well, how does that work?
The board of trustees approves the budget, and that has to be abided by. You're not gonna, you know, money's accounted for.
Yeah, Bill's run a department at Auburn University before with a budget.
Yeah,
if you came to them, the money's accounted for, and you can
spend up to your limit, but you can't spend over.
If you came to your bosses and said, "I need 25% more than the budget allows to operate
that.
This year,"
I understand that. That's different. I'm saying, okay, we had a budget and we went and bought a $25 million scoreboard or whatever we just did, or whatever it was. Somebody approved that. So somebody could approve that we can spend $13 million on a coach, right? I mean, it's our board of trustees that has to approve it, right? It's not that Auburn can't do it. It's that the board of trustees is not deciding to commit to football enough to get a coach that we don't have to keep buying out.
Well, I mean, for things like the scoreboard, you also go into debt to be able to do that. I mean, because it's in addition to what you have already planned on doing. So you either have some excess reserve that you can spend, but the reserve from the university is not spent on athletics. Athletics has their own separate budget as
but
well.
That's their decision. That's their decision to do that. I mean, I just have a hard time believing that it costs $1.6 billion to run the university. So they decide they want to store money away. I get it. That's a decision they make. But it's like a decision we could say, hey, we're not going to spend any money on basketball. They can make that decision. I get it. But I don't understand why they wouldn't want to make that decision. I guess that's what I'm trying to say is why would you not?
If I may jump in here, Pat, it seems like the argument you're making is that the Auburn football program is an important enough part of the university's image and its marketing arm for, you know, its public relations, all that. Like, it's important enough that it needs to be prioritized with the best coach possible. You need to gas up this fantastic vehicle that you have in your garage, and that's something that you shouldn't be. And I would say, without knowing intimate details of exactly how they decide the budget for, well, we're willing to go to 10, but we're not willing to go to 11, or we're willing to go to 11, but we're not willing to go to 12. Without knowing that, I do think the argument can be made that just like when Alabama hired Nick Saban, and people said, this is ludicrous. You're paying $6 million for a football coach? Like, this is people.
But again, that wasn't university funding. I just I won't say who this is from, but this is someone who was very, very heavily
well sourced.
Involved in the budget for the university. Reminding me to let everyone know it is state law. State law is Auburn University funds are taxpayer dollars. They cannot be mingled with athletic funds, which are, quote, self-funded. So it has to come from athletic funds.
Oh, well, that's perfect. That's the answer I was looking for. It just seemed like, you know, I there had to be some kind of rule or something, because it seemed like Auburn has always cared about football. So it just seems like, you know, it's kind of like we got like Dan's perfect example. We got this Lamborghini we built with the players, with the facilities, with the stadium, with the fan base, and everything's great. And we just don't have
a driver. Yep.
Yeah.
Or we refuse to put the premium gas in it.
We put a second scoreboard, but we're not going to go get a better coach. It's like, okay. It's like almost like.
As I said to Tex, and I think he more or less agreed, although he did point out the realities of the economics of it. Like, if you try to save, you know what, you could, it's a penny wise and pound foolish, right? You try to save a little bit of money now, it could cost you a lot of money down the road by making the wrong decision with a coach. Or you could, like the Alabama Nick Saban example, you could seemingly overpay for a coach right now, and it could pay off with a jackpot, you know, over the next 10, 15 years.
If you took all the buyout money that we paid in the last 10 years,
you could build a new university.
We could have paid someone $12 million the whole time, and we never would have had to buy them out.
That was the Nick Saban example. Is it people who thought Nick Saban was crazy overpaid? Bill, you remember when he signed that deal at Alabama.
Yeah. After a while, that was one of the best investments in history.
Yep, exactly. Thanks, guys. Where we go?
Appreciate the call, Pat. We need to get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron. With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final minute or so of hour number one of The Drive, and we can actually talk about you know, the games that are going to be played on the field this week. But, I mean, it's been a fun first hour.
Yeah, some good questions there, and I think that it the tone of some of these questions tells you where Auburn is as a program right now, too, and underscores just how big tomorrow is for Hugh Freeze, for Jackson Arnold, for an Auburn defense that a lot of folks wonder, like, they got their hearts broken Saturday night, fourth game in a row. Can they answer the bell against that Arkansas offense?
Yeah, we will. We'll talk about that and much more. We're halfway done here on the Friday Drive. Come on in and join us.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, we'll take a look at tomorrow's matchups, including Auburn-Arkansas.
There's some real we've been talking Auburn football all week, understandably, I think, after the Missouri game and with the Arkansas game tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Some really interesting stuff up and down the schedule tomorrow, including how about South Florida-Memphis? A really big one in that league.
It's huge for Memphis now after UAB knocked them off last week.
Yeah, I mean, can Memphis win out and be the party crasher in the college football playoff? I mean, they've got South Florida at home. I know they've got Tulane at home later in the season.
Tulane, we've had some people talking about John Sumrall. He's got a chance to guide his team into the playoffs.
And I think you're going to hear Alex Golish's name for some of these jobs. Former Tennessee assistant, now the head coach at South Florida. He's got them in the top 25. They go to Memphis tomorrow morning, and one of those three teams, South Florida, Memphis, or Tulane, feels like they could be the non-major conference team in the college football playoff. And tomorrow's game could have a big say in that one.
Yeah, I mean, a few SEC teams with the week off. Obviously, Florida and Georgia have the week off before they play each other next week. But everybody else is in action, and we'll look at those games and more. We'd love to get your thoughts. Do you see an upset anywhere? It seems like, again, this looks like one of those weeks where it's pretty easy to peg the favorites. I would say one that surprises me a little bit is Oklahoma. And Oklahoma opened as a 4.5-point favorite, and it's gone up. They're now a 5.5-point favorite over Ole Miss. I know the ball game is in Norman, but how do you feel about that one, Dan?
Is that I wonder if that is. I mean, there's a maybe. I mean, look, Oklahoma does have an excellent defense.
They do.
I'm a little surprised. I thought that would be a line that was a little bit closer.
Closer maybe to a pick 'em.
Maybe even Ole Miss favored because of. Yes, Ole Miss did struggle down the stretch in that Georgia game. Georgia did finish 17-0 fourth quarter.
Yes.
So maybe there's a little bit of concern about a hangover effect. But no, I thought that game was gonna be close. I'm surprised that the line is where it is.
Yeah, nearly a touchdown in that.
Also skeptical about Oklahoma.
I am too.
Right? Like, I think there's yes, Oklahoma played well, hammered South Carolina. Who knows what that situation is right now. But it's it feels like the playoff road for the loser of Ole Miss Oklahoma gets a lot tougher because they both have a conference loss and they both have a limited number of Oklahoma does have.
Oklahoma's got a serious finish to the end of the season. I mean, look at from this point on, they've got Ole Miss at home this week. They're in Knoxville next week after an open date. They're in Tuscaloosa. Then they have Missouri and LSU at home. I mean, that is a killer stretch down the rest of the way. I mean, the last five ball games are all against ranked teams.
Yeah, and meanwhile,
most of them top 10.
Ole Miss does not play another team in the top 25 the rest of the way. Ole Miss finishes with South Carolina, the Citadel, Florida, and Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. So I'd say for Ole Miss, a loss here and you're in trouble because you could finish 10-2, but you could finish
strength
10
of schedule could, you could be a problem.
You could finish 10-2 without a lot of needle moving wins. You didn't play. I mean, Washington State was your non conference win from outside the SEC, your major conference opponent. You beat LSU, but that loss could that win could matter less as the season goes on. And you lost to Georgia, who was the best team on your schedule. So I think if Ole Miss were 10-2 with losses to Georgia and Oklahoma, it could be easy to sort of leave them leave them on the outside looking in of the college football playoff. Like you said, Oklahoma, on the other hand, Oklahoma could lose tomorrow, and if they win out to go 10-2,
then they should be in. Because of how tough their schedule is down the stretch, and they already have a win over Texas, who I don't know how great that is, but
lost that game.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, that's right. That's their loss.
But they would have a win over Ole Miss.
Yes,
they would have a win over Ole Miss, and then you think.
Well, you said if
they were to lose if they were to lose tomorrow.
I mean, still with Tennessee, Alabama, Missouri, and LSU, they won three of those to go 10-2.
Yeah, if Oklahoma's losses were Texas and Ole Miss, and that's it. They would have beaten Tennessee at Tennessee. They would have beaten Alabama at Alabama. They would have beaten Missouri. They would have beaten LSU. They beat Michigan earlier in the year. Like, I think Oklahoma would have a much better shot of making that case. So you don't want to lose tomorrow. A loss would be more damaging for Ole Miss, I think, because of the schedule they have left.
I agree. All right, we'll talk, because there are a couple of other really interesting games that could really send things either in the right direction or had them spinning out of control if they don't.
Lane Kiffin versus Brent Venables is a pretty good. I mean, that's worth the price of admission as far as like thinking about what those two guys have done in their careers on their respective sides of the ball. That's one of the better offense versus defense coaching matchups you could get.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Brian is up first this hour. Hey, Brian.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. Happy Friday to you. I was just going to comment on what Pat was calling about, and I think he too that Auburn University is a university as are not in the business to make money. So I mean, these universities pretty much work off of their budget. So it's not like you have excess funds you can just spread around. I don't know what our budget is, but I'm sure all of those funds are already earmarked for teacher salary or salaries, professors, all that stuff. So it's not like you're a business where you can say, oh well, we made this much more money this year, we can spend it on other things. And then as far as Tex, I was curious because he's I love listening to Tex, he's a great caller. I was curious, did he didn't give his opinion either way on what his thoughts are. Or have I missed that somewhere? I mean,
I don't think Tex has really wanted to be out there saying, it's time for a change or not. But I mean, he, as I think just about any Auburn, longtime Auburn football fan, is concerned, to put it mildly, and understands that. He's now or never.
Yeah, he's not someone who's going to put his he's not going to put his saddle on the wrong horse. You know what I mean? Like that's the, he's going to like and maybe he doesn't want to jump out on it, but I think as the season's going on, we started the show talking about this, Brian. It's harder and harder, even if you want to debate the merits of a mid-season coaching change. It's harder and harder to make a case for a year 4. As this season goes on.
Yeah, it is. I'm this week.
Sorry, Brian, you're breaking up a little bit there. We appreciate it, but
and again, just how much everything has changed in college athletics. Not a decade ago, you felt like anything less than 4 years, there'd better be something. Yeah. Terrible. I mean, you better either be have imminent probation or obvious signs that the coach is running the program in the ground and you're not going to be able to compete. But now with the ability for rosters to change so drastically every year, I think the expectations are it shouldn't take you 4 years. Now it's if you don't get it done in three, then most places are going to be making changes.
And it also feels important that it's Hugh Freeze's side of the ball.
Yes. Oh, indeed.
Like if you were Arkansas, if the shoe were on the other foot, and you had a guy who had played like a top five quarterback in the SEC, and you had an offense that was top five in the SEC in total yards and scoring offense, and you were still 0-4 because your defense wasn't playing winning football, I think it would be easier to make the case for Hugh Freeze to continue as Auburn coach.
And make a change on the other side of the ball, and that should really help things. That's why I said I think Bobby Petrino, who has only been the interim head coach at Arkansas for a couple of games, has a pretty good case. He can say, look, this offense is really clicking. I need to hire the right defensive coordinator.
And Pittman was more of a CEO
who had
empowered two coordinators to have their sides of the ball.
He wasn't a play caller.
No, he was someone who was very comfortable in sort of an oversight role, watching an offensive coordinator run the offense and a defensive coordinator run the defense. That's not Hugh Freeze.
No.
Really, that's not. And I don't think that was the expectation. When you hired Hugh Freeze,
absolutely
Hugh Freeze was going to be.
You're going to bring in a guy who is, it's his ability to create big plays and score a lot of points.
And I think more so, and that's when we talk about, and we could talk about the officiating story now that it's picking up. It's getting sourced.
Well, we did say yesterday we know that it did indeed happen.
Sure, it was the strange thing there, and kudos to Yellowhammer for getting the news, getting the story, because that felt like something that if true would have broken from
traditional. It's not the kind of thing the SEC wants out.
And
period.
And they're still not talking about it. No. By the way, although I will say that the Yellowhammer report called it a permanent suspension.
Well, it is, because Ken Williamson is retiring at the end of the year. He'd already let people know this was his last year. Little did he know that his last game is done.
Now maybe we can quibble about this, I suppose. But if you announce you're retiring in 2 months and I suspend you for the next 2 months, that's not a permanent suspension, right? It's just you've got to spend it for 2 months and then you've retired. Like it's easier to
announce it's a permanent suspension.
And I did not tell this story, but I had someone who deals with high school officials in Florida tell me that the single most damning thing from that Auburn-Georgia game was not the. I mean, you can be angry about the fumble on the goal line.
I was.
You know the answer.
I've heard the goal line call had nothing. Was not one of the plays that was egregious.
The inadvertent whistle / I was just clapping timeout thing, and giving Georgia a new 25.
Yeah. Well, he was the head official. That's right.
That's terrible. That's something that would get you in trouble at significantly smaller levels than SEC high school than SEC football. And yeah, at something where I'm not all that shocked that because it was. I mean, that's something that even when you're being mocked by, ESPN's team on TV for falling for something like that, and they're showing clips of Kirby laughing about it. And thinking, that he got away with one on the sideline, I could see how that was something where the SEC felt like they needed
that. He is the same official. When the story first broke from Yellowhammer, there was immediate response from all across the country, teams that felt like he was one of the worst officials they'd ever seen. Ohio State fans still go back to the 2019 championship game and feel like he made two terrible calls.
Pass interferences, right?
Yeah. In that ball game, I think Kirk Herbstreit commented during the championship game about how he couldn't believe that call wasn't overturned. But I mean, there were plays, and it wasn't just calls against Auburn in the Auburn Georgia game. Apparently, it was calls against both teams, and this was a pattern that had just been going on for quite a while.
But the reason I bring this up is to circle back to what we were just talking about. Like I still think even acknowledging officiating mistakes, you would look at the offense in year 3 from Auburn, and you would look at the quarterback play in year 3 from Auburn, and you would say This is a concern, and it's an even bigger concern when it's supposed to be the head coach's bread and butter.
Oh, yes.
Like when it's supposed to be the head coach's calling card, and it's not happening. And I think that's something else. The fact that it's not just the wins and losses, but it's Hugh Freeze's perceived strengths as a coach that are letting you down. I think that forces the issue as far as if you need to make a change. Like that's, again, if it were the same win-loss record but with great offense and bad defense, it would it feels like there would be less pressure to, oh, you're going the wrong way, you've got the wrong person, you've empowered the wrong people at the top. As it stands now, it feels like unless you have that offensive breakthrough that Hugh Freeze feels like he's close to, if you go to the press conferences,
right.
Without that, it feels like not only did you not get the wins and losses you thought you were going to get, you also did not get the Hugh Freezeification of the Auburn offense did not lead to the scoring bonanza, didn't turn you into Florida. Spurrier or
I mean, as a matter
Meyer.
Of fact, Auburn's scoring output has gone down, has been going down.
It turned you into Florida under Billy Napier.
Yeah, no kidding. That didn't turn out so well either. We were talking about this a little while ago. I know we've got to get to break here, but I'd love to get some folks' thoughts on this too. As to I was looking and mentioned to you during a break a little while ago, some comments between Auburn and Florida folks. Just the difference in the style, not just the style, but the culture at these schools. It's interesting. Florida, I think Florida fans are really looking for, they want the next Steve Spurrier, obviously, but they like a flamboyant, flashy, quick, sarcastic, they sort of want that. That's what they want. Whereas,
well, I think it's about playing style too, though.
It like, is. Flashy. It is a flashy, high scoring, fun. I mean, what was Spurrier? It was fun and gun.
The question you seem to be asking to me is like, is it how much of your identity as a program is based on what's worked in the past?
A lot of it is.
Because for Florida,
a lot of it is, but I think it's also just the generations of people that have been through the school and their ideals, their philosophies, their way of life. Florida and Auburn are not the same. I mean, they just aren't. Auburn. I know there's some younger fans that go, that's a crock, it shouldn't matter, and they'd love that. But I think Auburn is just especially the people that are making the decisions, are more comfortable with blue collar, hard work, outwork you, out physical, and if we can score a lot of points, that's great. But I think Auburn has tried to go the other way. I think they've tried to find that really high-scoring, freewheeling, offensive-type thing. But, after 20 years of it now, maybe, or it's not even 20 years, but, I mean, getting close to that, I'm hearing more and more people saying, we need to find, and you're hearing more Auburn people saying, and I don't disagree, need a defensive coach that can find a good offensive coordinator, as opposed to let's bring in that brilliant offensive mind as the head coach.
And I guess my question sort of corresponds to, you look at who's been the most successful coaches at Florida over the last 40 years, and it's
well, the most successful coaches at Florida ever.
Spurrier
and Meyer.
Meyer. Dan Mullen won some games as an offensive
mind,
too.
Wasn't enough, but
but that doesn't look so bad now.
No kidding.
You saw what Billy Napier did. And so, no, I could see why Florida fans would say, this is what's worked. Explosive, a guy who prioritizes explosive offense and has a track record of creating that at different places has worked for us in the past. It could work for us in the future. Auburn, you look and see who the most successful Auburn seasons since 1980. Who are the coaches? Pat Dye, Tommy Tuberville, Gene Chizik.
Yeah, and before Pat Dye was Shug.
Sure. But even
I mean, there's similarities. A lot of very similar.
And going to that well, like, eventually I could understand people saying, well, the sport changes and you know, at some point that may become passé. There are still a lot of programs with defensive-minded head coaches that are doing well now.
Yeah, there are.
There are still.
Look at your top 10.
I don't think there's one way you have to go. I think disqualifying offensive-minded guys.
Some are better
guys.
Fits, yeah. And fit is very important at every school.
And I think that's that word, the belief that I think especially a John Sumrall and maybe a Clark Lee,
Brent Key. I mean,
would fit potentially because they've built a program from the line of scrimmage out, as opposed to at wide receiver and quarterback and at the pass rush. Like that's something. Yeah, I think it could work with a couple different guys depending on who you empower and what their strategy is. But I think it is. I do think people are sort of look, and it's not the wrong thing to do to look at the past and say, look at what's worked for this program right. And what's made this program like, and the guys that are like Pat,
especially
Dye,
when you look recently and go and see that we went a different direction and it didn't work.
And if you wanted to find your Pat Dye or your Tuberville or your Chizik for 2025, you know, I think some of those names that we just mentioned would be guys that, mm-hmm. that folks would look at. If you want to find your Urban Meyer or your Steve Spurrier in 2025, that could be Lane Kiffin. That could
be Eli
Drinkwitz. That could be
Kenny Dillingham.
Could be Alex Golish potentially at South. Like there are names that would fit that bill too.
All right, we'll get to our first break. We're going to get back to the phones.
Brian is hanging on. Yeah, different Brian, not Jupiter, Florida.
You can get in line behind him. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back to the Friday Drive with Bill and Dan. Let's get right to the Drive hotline. And Brian is up next. Hey, Brian.
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing today?
Doing all right, man. Happy Friday.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Great show today. Dang, you made a good point a little while ago, and I'm driving, so I don't remember when it was, but there was a caller that was talking about, you know, all the costs that Auburn would be saving by keeping the coaching staff and this. You made a good point by saying those costs are easily listed. They're easily quantified. But what is not easily quantified is what you're losing by keeping those folks. And the thing about those costs that you're talking about, Dan, is they come in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And when that valve shuts off, it shuts off quickly. And I was at the game the other night versus Missouri, and the crowd was great. It was great. It was a great atmosphere. And you couldn't tell if you were inside of that stadium. It was really hard to tell, other than the play on the field, that Auburn football team was bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think when that valve shuts off, when those fans say they've had enough, it doesn't shut off incrementally, I don't think. If Auburn gets blown out tomorrow, I think next Saturday in Jordan-Hare will be a completely different crowd versus Kentucky. Dan, I think you made a good point there. And when y'all were talking last segment about the offensive guy versus the defensive guy, who do you bring in? I'm more of a defensive guy that's go around myself, but I'm not against an offensive guy. I'm against an offensive guy that has a system that really, really works, and that's what he has. That's who I'm against. A Lane Kiffin that has shown the tendency to be able to change, to adapt, and to move, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, how many of those guys are there that you just can think of off the top of your head?
I would say
offensive
guy, like system guys that people have mentioned. I mean, Golish is running the Tennessee offense that, mm-hmm. that Josh Heupel has there, and you haven't seen him. He's only 40. He's only been a head coach for a couple of years. He's a guy that you'd probably be marrying an offensive system, mm-hmm. if you made him the coach. I think Dillingham has some flex as far as what the offense needs to do. I think that's sort of
he's a Norvell.
I think he's looking at, I don't know if it's necessarily we have to have, and again, the thing I said earlier, it's so much of what makes the Lane Kiffin system work is that he is better maybe than anyone else in college football right now at identifying the right quarterback for his offense and going and getting him over and over and over again, right? Like in multiple different stops, yep. multiple different places, and usually not the guy that people had pegged.
Yeah, a lot of times not the guy.
He says, no, this is the guy, and he's right.
No, y'all are exactly right. That the point about Lane and his quarterbacks is just it's incredible, honestly. I mean, the dude is a little quirky, but, man, he just delivers year after year on that side of the football. The one thing I'll say, and I'm a Summerall guy personally, even above a lot of other guys who've had more experience than success at the Power 4 level, like a Lashley or a Dillingham, I'm a Summerall guy, but I just don't want us, and I'm putting myself in that camp when I say this, are we trying to find the next Pat Dye and just looking at that as, oh, well, John Summerall has that tough attitude, and are we buying into something that may not possibly be there just because we want it so bad?
That's a very good question.
You should not want John Summerall because he reminds you of Pat Dye.
No.
Like that would, I would agree with you.
No,
like that
absolutely
is not.
Not.
Not the reason.
I mean, if he does, that's great, but that should not be a factor at all.
Now, I am impressed. I know some folks are going to roll their eyes at, like, again, coming from the non power conference ranks, but I'm impressed by a guy who has shown up at a couple of messes. I mean, Troy was in dire straits.
Yeah, they were.
Post Chip Kelly Chip Lindsey when John Summerall shows up and he wins a lot of games in 2 years and sort of, you know, puts his imprint on the program. But no, I think that's an easy mistake to make, is hiring a guy because he reminds you of a different guy. Like that's not why you should want a head coach.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm a Summerall guy. I want him to get the job. The other thing that I will say is I don't think the competition for John will be as much as other guys. And it's not because he's not a good coach. It's because Florida cannot go down that route again. They will not hire a coach that has not been a Power 4 head coach again. They won't do it. I think Florida will go to Eli before they go to John.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no question. That's one of the things we were talking about. That is, but Florida wants a guy that fits their personality. Eli definitely would do that. They want somebody that is proven, but not only proven, they want somebody that they feel like is going to fit the mold of their figurehead. They want somebody out there that draws crowds with their personality.
I kind of think there's more pressure. And I know Ole Miss hasn't been to the SEC championship game. I know they haven't contended for a national championship in a very long time. They haven't done either of those things under Lane Kiffin yet. I still would say that you can build a team that puts you you can build a team good enough to win college football playoff games at Ole Miss in the current environment. You look at who they beat LSU earlier this year, just played Georgia really tough in Athens. I think you can do that. I wonder if that's true at Missouri, Bill. I wonder if at Missouri you can build the kind of roster that wins.
There should be more talent within a couple of hundred miles of Oxford than there is Columbia, Missouri.
And how about Gainesville?
Oh, God.
Like that's where I would say, like, for Eli, as much as he's built at Missouri and as much as he's won, I still could see, like, I could see the advantages of jumping to a superpower even more than I could maybe with Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. Last point I'll make about the game tomorrow. I guess there's four outcomes, right? Auburn wins close. Auburn wins in a blowout. Arkansas wins close. Arkansas wins in a blowout.
Right.
I'll be honest. I'm absolutely cheering for the first two. I hope Auburn either wins in a blowout or they win close, but the third, my third in that ranking is that if Auburn cannot win, I hope Bobby P absolutely rolls it up, because I'm tired of this back and forth. Well, we're close.
Mm-hmm.
The referees, this play, that play. If we cannot win tomorrow, I hope it is completely obvious to everyone involved that this guy can't get the job done, because it, to me, it's time to pull the Band-Aid off. And I would like to see it done after tomorrow if we if he can't get the job done.
Either win or let Bobby leave, no doubt. Right? That's sort of his thinking there.
Yeah, I understand that. All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Back with more of your phone calls. Who do we have up?
Jim is hanging on.
Yeah, you'll be up first when we come back.
Didn't want to cut you off.
For the final half hour of the Friday Drive. Welcome back into the Drive, final half hour here on this Friday with Bill and Dan, and Jim has been hanging on for a while. Hey, Jim.
Hey, guys.
Hey, bud.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you fine.
Hey, okay, good. I've never called in a radio station before, so you guys cut me some slack.
You're doing great so far, Jim.
In the car. All right, great. All right. My thoughts on a coach, this may just be me, but I want a coach that has class. I want a coach that you can be proud of when he gets on television and makes comments. You know, I'm a graduate of Auburn. I love Auburn. I love the school. I love the whole family. I love the football team. I love all of it. And so it's important to me that the coach represents us well.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, my thought is, and I know this sounds crazy, but the winning is not as important to me as having players that you can be proud of, players that put forth a lot of effort, that you see them trying very hard to win football games. And and I know he wasn't capable or quite ready to be a head coach yet, but those two games that Cadillac coached the games, those players really fought. And they really played hard for him. So I really want a motivator, too. So, you know, and in the past, we seem to have gotten coaches that all had a plan in their mind of what they thought would work. And, you know, I just like, you know, Malzahn, we got pretty good results with him, but he was always trying to make his system work. And a lot of times he was trying it when he didn't have the right players to do what he needed to do. I mean, everybody knows if you don't have Cam Newton or
Nick
Marshall, that offense just did not work, you know? And so, but, and now we seem to be in the same situation where, you know, and I've heard even you guys say it, well, he's not the type that he's going to run and run short passes. He wants to spread the ball out all over the field or whatever. Well, I mean, I would like to tell the man, you're Auburn now. You're in it for all these people, all these fans, the universities, the players, everybody. You're one little piece of this, and it really doesn't matter what you can prove to yourself or anybody else. You know, we want you to do what it takes to put us in the position to try to win football games. What do you think?
I think you know what? I think that a lot of what you said gets lost in the pursuit of victories at any cost. Right? I think a lot of what you're talking about is like, well, this is, it's just about results and it's not about how you do it. And I think that it is, there are a lot of people who still want to see a team win the right way. And still want to see, you know, or how about this, still want to see their team play the right way and win. And I think sort of what you're outlining there is, you know, you want, and as important as it is to have a salesman in the lead job, because you need to be able to market the program to recruits and to fans, you need a leader too, right? It's not just about salesmanship. It's about leadership. And that's something that I would imagine. And it's not binary. It's not one or the other. I think Bruce Pearl showed you can have both a salesman.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You can have both a salesman and a leader at the front of your program. It's about finding the right one for your football program.
Yeah, and you know what? The other thing I'm going to say, and then I'm going to let you go. But the other thing I was going to say is, seeing our coach now on the sidelines, he looks defeated as soon as you see him. I mean, the expression on his face, it's just not there. He's red-faced. He's not clean-shaven. You know, that may just be the persona. I don't know, but I don't see any, you know, congratulating players. I don't see clapping. I don't see how that's motivating the players to be their best, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
Good stuff, Jim.
Really?
And a lot of folks have pointed to, and again, I think that when you're losing, this stuff gets magnified, right? Body language, how close of a shave you have, expressions, things like that. And it's valid. I mean, I think it's all part of motivation. It's mm-hmm. all part of leadership. There are some, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything. You know, you got those folks. I think that when you're winning, you can overlook a lot of that stuff as a fan base. When you're losing, all of that stuff becomes more important. But no, good stuff from Jim. Great first call.
Oh, absolutely. Don't be a stranger. Love to hear from you again. 334-321-1390.
Philly Fanatic is calling in. What's up, bud?
You there?
Hey, yeah.
Bud. All right. So I want to circle back to last week. Dan, you brought up Abbott Elementary. My friends from Philly, they watch it, but they think, and I think too, that the best new TV show on HBO probably is Taft with Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, it was outstanding. Yeah. It really, really was. That was very good.
Is that a Philly show too? I haven't watched Taft.
No.
They're doing, okay.
No, it is a Philly show.
Okay.
Well.
You better look at it again. It's from Delaware County.
Yeah, I was going to say, but it's not. I was thinking like the city, Philly. It's out in the country.
It's not in the city. It's in a suburb.
Oh, yeah.
And they like the accents. You know, Kate Winslet, she's got the mayor from Easttown. My friends boo her. She hasn't gotten the Philly accent down. Okay, Bill, I got another thing for you. I call flub the dub on another Philly who not recently hit, fairly recently, hit four home runs in one game. You know who that was?
Another Philly who recently hit four runs.
Not Schwarber.
No, go back to 1976. Now can you come up with him?
Ooh.
Okay, I'll throw it out.
Dick Mike L. Smith, no, that wasn't.
Mike Smith, 1976.
Schmidt.
Was
Schmidt
hit four home runs in Wrigley.
I said Schmidt when we were talking four homers. I didn't realize it was all the way back in 76.
Yeah, he hit 548. That was the biggest.
The cornerstone or the keystone guy. He was definitely a stud on my fantasy team for his entire career that we played fantasy. So yeah, no, I definitely appreciated Mike Schmidt.
I want to give a shout out to my University of Delaware Fighting Blue Hens. They're now in the Conference USA, which is FBS, so now they'll be on TV. I've seen them a couple of times midweek on ESPN2. They're going to have to beef up their team because they weren't particularly competitive. But anyway, you know, they won six national championships with quarterbacks like Joe Flacco and Rich Gannon, who mm-hmm. both played in the Super Bowls. And I'll tell you, Joe Flacco and probably Pavia are probably old enough to get Social Security because they've been playing forever.
Yeah.
And one more thing, Daniel, I just got back from fishing. You asked me what kind of lures I use. I have four rods, and I use soft plastics with things that the fish are going to eat, like, you know, worms, minnows.
I was going to say, your night crawlers guy?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're soft. They look like night crawlers, but I mean they're plastic. Mm. They look like night crawlers too. That's right. Anyway, one more thing about the how long do you think Freeze will go with the quarterback Jackson if he's not doing well? Mm. Would it be a quarter, a half, third quarter?
I think the
leash has got to be really short tomorrow.
I tell you what, if you're looking at two drives where Jackson hasn't played well to start the game, especially since that first drive has been his best in a couple games in a row, like I think a slow start and you're warming Ashton up again pretty early in this game.
Yeah, that's about what I think also. And I think we're, like what the previous caller said, we're getting to just like it's we're getting to, if we get like Harsin and people quit going to the games, the mayor's not going to be happy because they're going to lose all that money that they have. I mean, it's one thing to go to Atlanta, but if it's in Auburn and nobody shows up, that's not particularly good.
Oh, and I think John, anyway, I think John Cohen would notice that too, Bill. Right?
Like, yeah, you, I think
you think someone he's got his finger on the pulse. Great stuff, Philly.
Okay, bye bye.
All right, we will get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, final segment here on this Friday, and with Bill and Dan, and yeah. It's been a fun show today. I mean, we'll see. I believe that if Auburn doesn't come back with a win, then it's going to be very difficult for us to be, you know, optimistic about much more time.
I mean, I think
in the Hugh Freeze era,
Hugh Freeze has set the terms of the deal himself by saying that the quality of the opponent the last 4 weeks was a big reason for the result, right? And so you've got a chance against a step down in competition from Oklahoma, A&M, Georgia, and Missouri. You get a chance now to show that your team is you know, that some of that is valid, and without it, without results tomorrow, yeah, I just think you could maybe provide John Cohen with ammunition to make kind of an easy decision. I think would be the case with a loss tomorrow, or even a home loss to Kentucky a week later, for that matter. I think those are two games where it would be pretty easy for Cohen to say where it becomes a little more clear cut than it even is right now.
You know, we've talked about some of the other ball games around the conference. One I think that is really interesting is that LSU Texas A&M game in Baton Rouge.
Is he in trouble?
Well, if they lose, look at this. Yeah. If they lose, that's loss number three, and they still, their next ball game is in Tuscaloosa, and then they go to Oklahoma to end the season. 7-5 for Brian Kelly, I think would be big trouble.
And I think there's already
– we've talked about fit. Mm-hmm. It never felt like Brian Kelly really fit in Baton Rouge, did it?
And he's somebody who – I mean, there's the belief that they lost a lot of games when they had the Heisman-winning quarterback, right, when Daniels was there, you know, that mm-hmm. season in 23. I mean, this would be his 10th loss in conference play in 4 years, which, I don't know. And this was supposed to be a big year for him and for them. So I think that would be, at a place that expected to be near the top of college football this year, a loss. Yeah,
they were a preseason – they were pushing the top five, weren't they, preseason?
They were a team a lot of folks. I mean, they were clearly one of the four best teams in the SEC in the preseason. So was Texas.
Yep.
So we're learning more and more about what this league looks like. You know, and both those teams are outside of the top 15 now, while Missouri and Vanderbilt are battling in. By the way, how about that one tomorrow?
Yeah.
What do you think?
For some reason, I feel Missouri tomorrow. I don't know why. Not that I don't have confidence, excuse me, and appreciate what Vandy's done, but I just feel like this is sort of it for Missouri, I think.
Pavia's got moxie, and Pavia's track record speaks for itself. That dude is 1-1-1. I thought, and I know the overall numbers didn't look all that great, I thought Bo Prabula made plays in big moments for Missouri against Auburn. Like, how many times against Auburn did it feel like there was a Missouri's got to have this third down,
yep,
or Missouri's got to have this play, or they're in big trouble. And Bopra was there making the, you know, mm-hmm, making the that's how I learned to pronounce his name correctly, by the way. Is he called Bopra?
Bopra Beulah.
Bopra Beulah. He was out there. You know, you get a first down, you get a first down. And so I think against Vanderbilt, folks roll their eyes a little bit when Hugh Freeze says this stuff. I think when he says Missouri might be the best front seven Auburn played in the four games, A&M's great.
They are.
Missouri's defensive ends are are tough. Like that is I know Vanderbilt just saw Alabama. It's a different kind of defensive challenge that you're going to see.
And they just beat LSU, who's been pretty good defensively.
They just beat LSU.
Well.
I want to see what Vandy can do. That one feels like a coin flip to me.
It does. I mean, there's some really fun ball games on tap tomorrow. We were talking during the break. I mean, Texas, Mississippi State. State's played games close, but it's funny. I mean, it seems like it's a combination of the success that Lane and Ole Miss are having, that Mississippi State looking at Jeff Levy, who is 0-11 in conference play, and there have been some talks that if they don't win a conference game, they may have to look at making a change. So I just don't know what Mississippi State expects.
Hey, real quick, let's get to Thor before the music starts playing, Bill. Thor, you're on.
Hey, guys. Dan, you talked about how when we start losing, it starts to magnify some of these things. I kind of look at it the opposite way. I feel like fans put on the rose-colored glasses.
Hmm.
You know, they wanted to ignore all Hugh Freeze's fault.
Hmm.
You know, his past, all the wrongdoings and things. They wanted to ignore that because they wanted to support their football team. You know, and he's got plenty of flaws on the sideline. And as you start losing, people start pulling those glasses off. Because when you wear the rose-colored glasses, all the red flags just look like flags.
That's right.
That's a good point.
My biggest fear is that we go up against a terrible defense tomorrow and our offense suddenly looks great. And everybody's just colored glasses right back on.
And I think offensive,
that's a legit concern.
Offensive progress tomorrow would need to be taken, you know, in context. You'd need to keep it going, but at least you would have the glimmer of hope that your offense played well against a terrible defense. I would point out on that front, though, look at the offenses Arkansas has played. Like, Arkansas has been a terrible defense against good quarterbacks all season long.
True.
Anyways, great stuff, Thor. It was a really interesting point.
We are out of time here on the Friday drive. So what did you go with? I'll tell you, I went Arkansas 31-20.
I think the ice is getting really thin, and I think it's an Arkansas win tomorrow for Bobby. I think another example of Bobby picking up a big win against Auburn.
Well, regardless, we will be here on Monday. Brian Matthews will be with us on Monday as well.
What time are they starting on Wings tomorrow?
Like 8? 6:30 is the game day on Wings. I got high school football coming up. Auburn at Dothan on Wings, 6:30 tonight. Lee Scott over on AU 100 as well. That's going to do it for the Friday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We're out of here.
Kroger, committed to zero hunger, zero waste. That's
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.